You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome back. Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I am your host, Jeff Hur. With me, as always, is the indefatigable Michael Engel. And with us, we have a very special guest, a friend of the show. We've had him on a few times before, but he's always a great guest. With us is Kansas City Star sports writer, Sam Mellinger. Sam, how are you doing this evening?
I'm great. And I apologize if I'm behind. Have you guys always had that sponsor?
Kelly's?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, for probably, maybe not for like the first 6 months, but it's been a couple of years now.
I'm very observant.
Well, I think sometimes,
cool. I love Kelly's.
Yeah, sometimes we don't, previously, I don't know if we had put it as part of the title and we just had commercials and stuff, so that might be why you hadn't noticed. But
yeah, old school pop.
There we are.
Can't beat it.
Yep, and we're actually sponsored by Baseball Reference Play Index now as well. So we got that going for us, which is nice.
Two of the better things in life right there.
Indeed, <That's very> indeed. So with Sam here with us, we're obviously going to talk a lot about the Royals. He's also got a new book that he contributed to that's coming out that we'll talk about. But first, Sam, we want to talk about with the Royals, and it's we've talked about it on this show a lot, and what we've kind of termed the Royal Coaster. It wasn't something that I guess we came up with really, but just the fan base in general has kind of been on the ups and downs of the Royals, and we just as high as we could as we've been in my lifetime after the 10-game winning streak into first place, and then now a 4-game losing streak, 2.5 games back of the Tigers. Just from the last couple weeks, what we've all seen, I mean, what do you make of everything right now with the way the team is?
It's, I don't know. I mean, it's like everything during those 10 games that was like, you know, the wet dream of this front office on how this team can play. They weren't like, you know, they had the couple games there where they scored, you know, 11 runs, I think, in back-to-back game. But for the most part, they were kind of doing what, you know, Dayton Incorporated, you know, sort of envisioned the top end of everybody performing. And then, you know, the 4 games, other than the, you know, the 5-run inning against Iwakuma, the problem has been the problem that we've all been talking about all season, right, the offense. And, you know, there's a tad bit of bad luck with that, I guess, if you want to kind of, you know, look at the bright side with the, I guess I'm thinking specifically the line drives that Hosmer and Butler hit yesterday, that certainly could have been base hits, but, you know, just hit right at people. But they sure got their fair share of good luck during the win streak, so I don't think they can really complain about that now.
Oh, they go up against Zach Greinke's back in town, Clayton Kershaw's right behind him, who looked as dominant as any pitcher's probably looked in the last, I don't know how long. So, I mean, after a 4-game losing streak, you know, everybody gets their hopes built up. But as you've said multiple times, there's always that feeling that there's a monster around the corner. So if they lose these next 2 games, I mean, granted, it's great competition. But, I mean, that's basically you've given up more than half of the streak that you just came by. Is that kind of just the big drop, and they peaked in the middle of June?
Yeah, I mean, for whatever reason, this team, they were crazy, like historically streaky last year too, you know? You know, it wasn't just the bad May, but then, you know, they had the swoon right before the All-Star break, and then they had a few streaks there where they win like 8 of 9 or whatever. I mean, it was I was looking, trying to find evidence using Baseball Reference Play Index, by the way, of like all of these, you know, streaks. How many teams have had streaks like the Royals did last year? It wasn't, I don't know if it was any. And, you know, to go from, like you said, the 10, and you're starting to dream a little bit, and it would be, I'm trying to figure out how you would dump on a 10-game winning streak with more efficiency than the Royals have done the last four games, because, you know, you come back, it would have been a little bit nicer, obviously, if you come back on a win to the homestand. But still, they had to sell out and, you know, lost with their all-star badass closer giving it up to one of the worst hitters in baseball. And then, you know, like you said, because you've got Greinke and Kershaw the next two nights, you know, it's almost like the four games, people are just assuming it's six. It's kind of like, actually, the week, do you remember the week, it was right before they started playing well, they didn't just get beat by Houston, but just emasculated in that three-game sweep here at Kauffman Stadium. And that was also around the time, you know, Ventura leaves the mound holding his elbow. The news about Kyle Zimmer comes out, and it's just like...
And Duffy had his dead arm right after that, too.
Oh, I forgot about the dead arm, yeah. So it was just like all of these things, you know, it felt like however many losses felt like twice that. And I think we're kind of going through that right now. And I think that the frustrating thing, you know, from a fan standpoint, I think, is that they should be past this, you know? Like, and a four-game losing streak, you know, every team in baseball is going to lose four in a row at some point. But if this turns into six or whatever, like, they need to be past this. This is stuff that, you know, you needed to be working through in 2011. And, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, the famous example everybody uses is Ned refusing to pinch hit for Alcides Escobar a few years ago with the explanation, I want him to be ready, you know, when we start winning. You know, this is one of those things that you would have hoped a big league team could work through, you know, sort of in their journey to go from, you know, adolescent dreamer to, you know, an actual adult that can win big league games.
That's a very good analogy. And, I mean, with that, you wrote an article recently where you talked about, you know, Royals need to be able to handle the pressure of winning. And that's something that I guess you could theoretically say they've had the luxury of not having to deal with that kind of pressure and the intense scrutiny that goes along with, hey, you're a first place team. You can't have those excuses anymore. So the question is, first of all, I mean, we'll start here and say, how is it a different dynamic with the Royals? Because it's, you know, if you're the Yankees, you've got pressure to win, absolutely, but it's pressure for this year. You know, it's kind of pressure for this game or whatever, but the Royals, there's really no way to avoid it. It's not just pressure for this year and, you know, oh, we can go buy somebody next year. We can get some, you know, it's 28, 29 years of pressure now that have built up and you just can't ignore it. You simply can't. And so how is it different for the Royals and are they coping with that well? I mean, is that something that in your time with the team, I mean, is that something that you see them looking at? Because obviously they're saying the right things to the media, but I mean, is it really, because it seems like we don't know if it's really showing through on the field now.
Yeah, I don't think that they're dealing with that very well at all. And, you know, that's why I wrote that expectations thing that ran yesterday in the paper. And then a week or 2 weeks ago, I wrote that thing about how they just need to grow up, which I was actually surprised a couple days after that. Ned Yost, like, you know, in one of his pregame things, said, yeah, we need to grow up. So, I mean, that, I think that stuff is absolutely real, and it matters. And I think it's one of the things that's holding them back. And, you know, there's a lot of theories that you could come up with, everything from, you know, these, for the most part, this is bonus babies. That have come up through the system, you know, things have been relatively easy for them coming up. They won championships in the minor leagues and stuff like that. And, you know, in the big leagues, for better and worse, because I think that there's both sides to it, for better and worse, they've got a manager that, you know, has made a foundational decision to pretty much just always go positive. And, you know, look at the batting, look at the lineup every night when Eric Hosmer's hit third. And, you know, I'm the first to say that lineup construction is vastly overrated, but you can't make a good argument for Eric Hosmer hitting third and Alex Gordon hitting fifth. You know, it's other than I just don't want to change it, and I'm afraid that Eric Hosmer will freak out or, you know, somehow react negatively to being moved out of the order. And I just, you know, that's one small thing. I think the way that they treated Mike Moustakas, I think there were signs in there that, you know, that they thought that was a fragile, you know, that he was fragile mentally with, you know, handling the failure that he was having. And, in large part, continues to have even now. So, you know, I think there's a lot to that, and I don't know how you break through it. You know, like I talked to George Brett about this exact same thing in spring training for Story that ran our baseball section. And, you know, basically, I can't remember if he said it in these exact words, but his answer was basically like, you can't do it except by doing it. You know, the only way to win under pressure is to win under pressure. And you don't, no matter what they say, they can't really be all that confident or know that they can do it until they do it. And, you know, there's the paranoia, the well-founded paranoia, I should say, from the fan base. You know, I agree. There's no way that doesn't seep through in some way. You know, it just has to.
With that in mind, you know, like you said, you've got Eric Hosmer, you have Mike Moustakas, both first-round guys who have been under the microscope since, you know, day one. You've got James Shields, who's been in this kind of, you know, he's been in the playoffs. You know, Omar Infante's been in the playoffs. You know, you've got Aoki's got a lot of professional experience. Butler, Gordon. So, at what point does it just, you just kind of have to ask, are these guys really as good as we think they can ever be? And also along with that, and going off pressure, I mean, you look at what they do in one-run games this year, where they're 8-15, but they have probably the best back of the bullpen in baseball, and they have the best defense in the league too. So it's like they've got it halfway, but the offense is full of a lot of guys who are either underachieving or were overrated coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to that. And that one-run thing, I mean, there still might be some small sample
sure.
with that. I mean, they were pretty good in one-run games, if I remember right, last year, right? I think that's right. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I think this is really the year, and the jury's still out. I mean, like, you know, the way this is going, they could still win 85 or 90 games. And, you know, if they have a May of 2013 in them, they could lose 80, 85, 90 games. You know, I mean, it's this season, I think, in every way could go in either of those directions. But I think this is the year that people have been pointing to for a long time because it's, you know, James Shields isn't going to be around next year. And so this is the year that they kind of have to go. And, you know, they're still a little young, I guess, but, you know, how old is Billy Butler? How old is Alex Gordon? I mean, these aren't, like, you know, old, grizzled veterans, but they're not 21 years old, you know, and I think Mike Moustakas is going to turn 25 this year, right?
Yes. I think he turns 26.
I mean, they're not kids, you know what I mean? And they're, I guess, young, but Moose has like 1,600 plate appearances in the big leagues. You know, I just, that whole we're young thing, I just, you know, that was a good excuse. That was a good thing to talk about 2 years ago. But I just think that it, you know, there has to be a point where, you know, like the old Bill Parcells line, right? Like, you are what your record says you are. And, you know, look, like, you don't have to look outside the division. You can look at Long Beach Citizens Hall this year to look at, you know, a reason that big league teams are so hesitant to ever give up on a guy that they think has, you know, God-given natural talent. Because you don't know when it's going to bust. And, you know, like, look at, you know, Alex Gordon's career is another good example of a guy that, you know, if the Royals were in the situation they are now, you know, they may be in a place where they had to give up on Alex Gordon of, you know, 2000 and what are we talking here, 9 or 8, whatever. You know, like, that maybe they can't afford to wait around that long. But, you know, and somebody else would have gotten this crazy good left fielder that does everything in baseball pretty well. So, you know, there's a reason that teams stick with guys, but, you know, the record doesn't lie, the score doesn't lie. So, you know, at some point when Mike Moustakas is hitting 174 or whatever it is in the middle of June, you know, it's a very legitimate question to ask. Is he just not a very good big league hitter?
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point where, you know, the Royals, the majority of the Royals roster is young for the earth, perhaps. But in terms of baseball experience, I mean, they've all had, you know, Moustakas, Hosmer, all those guys came up in 2011, and they've been playing regularly ever since. So in terms of baseball experience, they're really not, you know, youngsters anymore. So that excuse, and it's just like you said earlier, you know, that was the whole point of the 2011 or 2012 and all that, is that those excuses should be out the window now. But along those lines, it's one thing I wonder is, we had the comment in the offseason that Dayton Moore made, the now infamous comment of, you know, it's in a small way, it kind of feels like we won the World Series. And regardless of what his actual intention was with that comment, it almost seems to kind of encapsulate this weird sense of accomplishment it almost feels like the Royals have, or at least the front office kind of projects. And is that something that you've kind of felt? Because just to us, it almost feels like when you hear them talk, when you hear them, you know, especially after that, during and after that 10-game winning streak, it's kind of like this. It probably stems from the fact that they've been so bad for so long. You kind of hit on this a little bit in your expectations article, where part of the ugly side of being so bad for so long is that even a loss like the Greg Holland giving up a home run to one of the worst hitters in baseball still feels good because it's been so bad that it's just nice to have meaningful baseball. So how is the front office battling this idea that they've actually accomplished something? Because while in broad strokes, maybe they have, but in terms of the reality of baseball, which is wins and getting to the playoffs and all that, I mean, they haven't accomplished anything yet. How are they balancing that, and are they doing a good job in your estimation?
I don't think they're doing a particularly good job with that. And it's a very sensitive organization, and that's another kind of thing that I was trying to get at with that, you know, these guys need to grow up column too. You know, I think a lot of these things sort of start at the top, you know, and I do think that it's the organizational personality is one of being more sensitive than a big league team should be, at least in my estimation, especially a big league team that hasn't been to the playoffs since 1985. And I think that some of that is just natural. It's just how, you know, I'm probably more sensitive than I need to be when I get, you know, a negative email or phone call or whatever from a reader. You guys are probably more sensitive than you need to be if somebody criticizes you. I mean, some of that's just natural.
For sure.
You know, I do think that even if you judge on the curve, it just – that's always been here. You know, that was in the, I can't remember when I wrote it, but, you know, the column with the line, and I didn't put anybody's name on it because it's been in private conversations, but it's, you know, at least I can think of three people off the top of my head that have said this almost exact word for word, which means that it's a company line of, you know, we get more love outside of Kansas City than we get here. And, you know, I think that's, I mean, there's some elements of truth to that, but the reason that, you know, baseball people in Chicago or Tampa or Houston or Seattle or San Diego or wherever are more impressed with what the Royals have done is those people weren't living and dying through Ken Harvey and, you know, Eduardo Villasís and Chip Ambriz and, you know, all of those things like people in Kansas City have been. So, yeah, I mean, that's cool. Like, there's two things that are both true here, and they shouldn't work against each other. They're not mutually exclusive. One is the Royals are light years ahead in 2014 as we speak. They are light years better than they were in 2006 when David Glass decided to stop being one of the worst owners in sports and hire competent baseball people to run the organization. I mean, they have talent that was just really never here except for Billy Butler and Alex Gordon and Zach Greinke in the minor leagues, and that's come up. The other thing that's true is they haven't done anything. That's all great for, like, Baseball America and, you know, to talk about what might come, but there has to be that payoff, you know, or else – I mean, I don't want to use the term, but anyway, that's dirty. I can't say that. You know, on a podcast.
This is a podcast. But, you know, you can say whatever you want.
You don't want to be teased, right? nobody likes to be teased. There has to be, you know, some sort of payoff at the end. And 86 wins is great. 86 wins is, you know, more than the team had since 1989. You know, we all know that number. But that can't be the crowning achievement, you know? And I think that where the conflict comes is the Royals organization is probably expecting a little bit too much love for an 86-win season that was never really in contention. You know what I mean? Like, they sort of, like, in some ways it felt like snuck up on 86 wins. You know, they weren't in first place. It, you know, July 1st. They weren't in first place on September 1st. You know, they weren't. It just wasn't the kind of 86-win season that really captivates people. But I think they kind of look at it and want all this momentum, and people in Kansas City are kind of feeling like, we've been teased before. You know, we've been told that this is coming before. And you know, with the I go back as far as that All-Star game when Kansas City packed Kauffman Stadium, and it was this loud, amazing atmosphere for the Futures game. And I've been to enough All-Star games. I mean, that does not happen. Like, places do not pack the stadium and hang on every pitch of the Futures game. That just doesn't happen anywhere else other than Kansas City. And then Friday night, you know, like, the fans showed up, and that wasn't for Rob Riggle. Like, that was because the Royals had surged and they were in first place. So I think it's been proven that if they get something to root for, these people will show up. And I think that the organization probably knows that. But I do think that they need to worry less about the credit they're getting, with the comfort of, you know, if they accomplish even close to the things that they're, you know, that their ambitions are going for, then, you know, these people, there'll be a Dayton Moore statue in front of Kauffman Stadium if they ever win a World Series here. You know, like, nobody will have to worry about, you know, freaking credit if they do something more than just 86 wins. But, I mean, you know, maybe they should be getting more credit right now. I don't really think so. But, I'll listen to that case, and it's, you know, it makes sense to me. I don't agree with it, but it does make sense. But, you know, the point is, because of that drought, there's just a lot of emotion that they have to deal with here that they wouldn't have to if they were doing the same job in Minnesota or Milwaukee or, you know, some other, you know, sort of smaller market that's had some success. But, you know, the flip side of that is that you get to be the hero, you know. If whoever follows Billy Beane in Oakland, you know, that's going to be a very different context than Dayton Moore walked into following, you know, the Allard Baird and the, you know, don't ever say it can't get worse Royals. You know, like, there's a much bigger payoff for what they're trying to do here. I feel like they should embrace that more than be sensitive about the pushback.
All right, so let's look ahead, and let's say 2 weeks from now the Royals are still 2.5 games behind Detroit. Is there a trade on the horizon? I know the Royals have kind of hinted that they're trying to wait till the middle of July, but, you know, do you get the sense that they're really trying to push internally to find, you know, someone else for right field, perhaps, or something for Mike Moustakas at third base, or some big move that might be able to get them a little bit higher? Because to me, it seems like with the defense and the way that the pitching's been, if they can be even close to average offensively, they've got something in them. But yeah, the lineup just doesn't have enough to it right now, and they're maybe one, even two bats away. So is there any kind of frantic looking behind the scenes that you can tell?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I don't think people are going to like this answer, but the biggest improvement that they can make offensively is for Eric Hosmer to be a good hitter. But, you know, as far as, like, external options, it's just not – I think they are willing. I don't think they're lying. I think they are willing to go do something. The problem comes in the balance of now versus tomorrow. And, you know, like, Ben Zobrist is the name that has been out there. And that name intrigues me a lot. I've always really liked that guy, you know, the versatility and all those things. But Ben Zobrist is fairly expensive. He's, I think, 33 years old. He's having a bad year. He wasn't that good last year either. And he's going to cost a lot in terms of, like, prospects and stuff. I mean, if you go through, like, comparable deals, I was actually talking with somebody earlier today trying to get, like, you know, a good comparable deal to, you know, Ben Zobrist being traded right now. And the one that I came up with was Hunter Pence, you know, a few years ago when he went from, what was it, Houston to Philadelphia, or no, when he went to San Francisco and ended up winning the World Series. And that was a huge return. You know, like I think that if you're going to trade for a guy like Ben Zobrist, you know, I think you're going to have to give up somebody really good. Like, I think you might have to give up, like, Dozier and Manaea. I think you might have to give up Mondesi and another prospect. I mean, one of these guys that you're really kind of dreaming about having for 6.5 years under club control. And when the math reaches that point, I don't know if that's still worth it, you know? If the payoff of Ben Zobrist costs you 6.5 years just of Mondesi, you know, that's a club-controlled shortstop with, you know, all this power potential and things like that. I don't think I would do that deal, you know? I mean, I think they should and will explore a bunch of options. But, you know, the idea, like saying, yes, add a bat, is much cleaner than, you know, sort of how the sausage gets made.
Right.
You know, you know, now, okay, you want a bat. Are you willing to give up Manaea and Dozier and something else for that? And I don't think I would, you know? I really don't.
Well, we don't want to take up too much of your time, and the game's coming up pretty close to start. But before we let you go, I mean, we talked about it at the top of this, that there is a book, The Art of Scouting, coming out by Art Stewart, and you've co-authored with him. I mean, just tell us a little bit about that project and kind of how it came about and what we can expect when we pick it up off the bookshelf.
Yeah, I've known Art for a while, and he's always been my favorite person in the building. He sort of embodies kind of what I love about baseball, and I think what a lot of people love about baseball, which is, you know, energy, approaching the kind of brutal grind that a big league baseball season can be with nothing but enthusiasm and stories and seeing the good. And, you know, I mean, think about this. This is a guy that, you know, is scouting right now. Like, you know, I mean, he was the guy that went and watched Hunter Dozier right when they promoted him. You know, I mean, he gave them kind of the last, you know, report on whether Dozier was ready to be promoted. And this is also a guy that was scouted when he was a high school player, scouted by Sisler, George Sisler scouted him. And, you know, this is a guy that, like, was part of the Yankees teams in the 1950s. And, you know, he has stories of, I'm trying to think of the best one. There were so many of them. He's the kind of guy, he has the kind of charisma. Here's one. They were coming back or going to a scouting trip to see Alex Rodriguez in Florida. And their car ran out of gas in the middle of Alligator Alley. And I don't know if you guys have ever driven through Alligator Alley, but right now it's kind of a desolate place, and it's named Alligator Alley for a reason.
Sure.
And, you know, 20 years ago, it was more desolate. And they ran out of gas. They found a farmer, like a sugar farmer, or I don't know what you farmed in Alligator Alley, but they found this guy, and Art just started telling stories about Bo Jackson and George Brett and, you know, all these guys. And this farmer that he met was taken enough by Art that he siphoned gas out of his tractor into their rental car so he could go watch Alex Rodriguez. You know, he talked his way through customs in a post-9/11 world using baseball. Yeah, I mean, he's got just an endless string of stories. He broke into a kid's house once. There was a prospect. They were all scouting, and they're all trying to sign. And he had the last appointment of the day. It was at midnight, and the guy that had the 11 o'clock appointment was going a little long. Art got nervous, broke into the house, and found a place where he could overhear what they were talking about. He broke in long enough to hear their offer. And the guy comes out, like, just talking smack. Art, go ahead and go in there, but you're wasting your time. I got this kid. And Art just walked in there and offered him, like, $500 more than the other guy and had him sign. I mean, it's just, there's a thousand stories just like that. I loved every second of it. That's not an exaggeration at all. I really enjoyed talking with him and doing the project. It was a release for me. It was a lot of fun.
So do you and Lee Judge have a contest on book sales?
No. I don't know if I should enter that contest or not, but I hope Lee does really well with that.
Yeah, well, with that, I think we'll let you go, Sam. I want to thank you again for coming on. You were a great interview, as always, and providing some good opinions on the Royals. And everyone, if you don't read, Sam, get a subscription to The Star. Go to the website, kansascity.com, read his stuff. Excellent stuff. If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's @Mellinger on Twitter. Don't miss his Twitter Tuesday columns. They're always a pleasure. He has some good recommendations for you for reading and for eating and everything. So with that, we'll let you go, Sam. But thanks a lot for coming on. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I always enjoy it. Anytime.
All right, we'll see you around. And with that, we'll take a break, and we'll see you back on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean. And maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. You heard in the previous segment, we had Kansas City Star Sports columnist Sam Mellinger on with us. Sam's always a great guest. He gave us a lot of good stuff, was pretty candid and pretty honest about some of the thoughts on the Royals. Honestly, you never know whenever you have, people in the kind of in the public eye, at least in terms of that. We've had a lot of different people on the show. Sometimes they're guarded, sometimes they're not. You know, sometimes depending on the show, the same person might be one or the other. But so, you know, I thought it was great that Sam was completely honest and, you know, he didn't think the organization was handling the pressure very well, or the players didn't think that the organization was handling the whole, you know, we've arrived, we've accomplished something dynamic very well. And, I would tend to agree. We've kind of talked about that. And, but one thing we want to kind of dig into is Sam mentioned how, you know, there's really no reason at this point for Eric Hosmer to be hitting third still and Alex Gordon to be hitting fifth. It's kind of one of those Ned being Ned type of things. He's just kind of dug his heels and said, this is who I am and this is how I'm going to manage. And that's, you just kind of have to accept it. So we've had some discussions on Twitter, and I think this goes kind of back and forth. There's people, whether you're sabermetric or not, it's kind of weird. We all know there's been this sabermetric backlash, you know, but beyond that, like, even people who truly agree with it, you know, and dive into the stats, there's also this almost kind of reverse thing when it comes to lineup order. You've got some people who are like, oh, you know, it's important, it needs to be. Needs to be thought out, it needs to be deliberate. And then there are other people that, oh, well, the evidence you know, the evidence isn't there. It doesn't really matter. And like most things in life, truth is it kind of lies in between, probably. But, you know, one thing, we've talked about this before, one thing that you really cannot dispute is going in descending order from 1 to 9 in your lineup order, your number one, your leadoff position, not necessarily that player, but the leadoff position is going to get the single most at-bats in the entire season. That is non-debatable. And then the second position is going to get the second most at-bats. So obviously you're not going to have the same person hitting in that order every single time, but that position is going to get the most. So the idea being you want to put your best hitters in those positions because they're going to get more at-bats. And then over the course of a season, more at-bats turns into more runs, which turns into more wins, which we all know is the end goal. But to kind of put some numbers behind this with our Baseball Reference Play Index, and side note, by the way, the Sam's drop of the Play Index was not planned, and that was not that he is not sponsored.
He did a great job as a pitch man. So if the star doesn't work out, he's got that for him, because he got Kelly's in there too. So
he did. I mean, that was not planned, but we appreciate the enthusiasm from him. But anyway,
absolutely.
Our Baseball Reference Baseball Reference Play Index stat of the week, if you will, something Mike kind of dug up about these different lineup orders and who gets more at bats and kind of what relevance it has. So Mike, why don't you tell everybody what you found?
Well, the thing that I was looking at, and you know, I have to preface this by saying that I've always been a big Eric Hosmer fan. I think he'll eventually get it, but right now he's nowhere close. He's just not good. If you look at players who have hit third in a lineup, I went to the Baseball Reference Play Index, and you can sign up at the Play Index, baseballreference.com/playindex. We'll also
use
have
a promo code
here.
Royals.
Yep.
And you will get $6 off your subscription.
Yep. You can go there, and I sorted it by, you know, a minimum of 100 plate appearances to kind of, you know, make it even, you know, just expand the sample size as much as I could. And it came up with 37 players who have gotten 100 plate appearances batting third in an order this year. And Eric Hosmer was 36th out of those 37 ranked by OPS. So that is a guy who's going to get the third most plate appearances on your team. And right now he leads the team in at-bats, and it's not really even close. He's got 35 more at-bats than Alex Gordon, who's next. Gordon, to his credit, has 14 more walks. So there's, you know, they're a little more even on the plate appearances side. But still, there's, you know, been, I don't even know if there's even been a time where Gordon's hit higher than Hosmer this year. And when you look at what Gordon's done, Gordon's definitely deserving of more at-bats. He's the best hitter on the team right now. He's the best player on the team right now. And Hosmer is just not performing. And so in light of what Hosmer's done, batting third, you know, and that kind of bad record there where he's, you know, 36 out of 37, well, you have to start to think about that lineup construction, because to an extent, yeah, I don't know that it matters a huge deal, because day by day, this guy might perform, this guy might not. But if you're looking at it from, you know, just theoretically constructing it, you probably want your best hitters hitting more often. And if a guy like Gordon is hitting better, he should probably be hitting more often, especially when it's very clear cut at this stage between the two of them. And Yost just will not budge. He won't. It's I don't know if it's something with Hosmer where he is just absolutely so fragile that he can't move down to fifth even. And not even that. Mike Moustakas right now probably has a better case to bat fifth than Eric Hosmer does, because since he's come back and over the last couple of weeks, Moustakas has been hitting pretty well. He's got, you know, four homers. He's got a bunch of extra base hits, and he's actually walked a little bit. So, you know, when you compare the two, or even the three, if you're talking Gordon, Hosmer, Moustakas, there's no question that Eric Hosmer right now is the worst performer of those three right now. And he's still going to get more bats than either of them over the course of whatever stretch because he's batting third. And I think in that kind of case, that does make a big difference as far as, you know, lineup construction. Maybe, you know, if you optimize this lineup, and we'll get to that in a second, it's only going to be, you know, X amount of runs. You know, maybe it's not. But the way that you win ball games is by getting those incremental advantages. And we talked about it last week where, you know, if you're a 4-3 team every week, you're going to get to 90 wins. You know, it doesn't seem like much. That one extra, you know, that one extra game here and there doesn't seem like that much, but it does add up. And it's the same thing. You know, there's the monologue in Bull Durham where he's talking about the difference between a 250 and 300 hitter. You know, it's one hit a week. It's one hit a week. It's like 25 extra hits. So those little advantages will add up. And this is, you know, the extra 2% by Jonah Carey is an illustration of this. You know, it's in a game like baseball where there are so many different instances and examples and different games, and, you know, you've got guys coming up to the plate 700 times. If you can get a slight advantage, you know, it's going to add up. And the Royals and Ned Yost just don't seem to be interested in taking advantage of a very easy move, which in this case is shifting the lineup.
Yeah, you know, it seems – it's one of those things where you just wonder, like, where are the Royals coming from with everything when – why does it seem so obvious to us but not to them? You know, like, we've been through this 100 times with different things, and it's like, where's the disconnect? You know, it's like, are the Royals that much smarter than everybody else, or are they that much dumber than everybody else? I mean, the evidence,
it's a little loaded question,
over the last 28 years, and if you even want to just put it to this front office, then, you know, the last 8 years, and then even just down to Ned, who makes the lineups every day, then, you know, it's just since 2010 or whenever he took over. So it's still, the evidence would strongly suggest that the Royals are not smarter, we'll put it that way, because they haven't won ball games. I mean, they did last year, but they didn't make the playoffs, and they still had their major struggles, and they just kind of battled through, and the problem that you have to wonder is, like, it's like you said at the beginning of your when you started talking about this, Mike, where, you know, you believe in Hosmer, you believe he's going to figure it out, and so do I. And the problem is, that's kind of baseball. You know, you have the ups and downs, and a talent like Hosmer is just going to figure it out, because, I mean, he probably is. You know, I'm not as high on him as I once was, so the idea that he's a 330 400, 500, you know, 900 OPS guy hitting 30 home runs a year, that's kind of out the window for me. But, you know, more of an Alex Gordon type player where he's in that 285 to 300 range with 40, 50 doubles, 20, 25 home runs, like, that's who I think he'll kind of settle into being. But the problem with what the Royals are dealing with right now is that they're going through this struggle, and they're not going to move Hosmer down, and then down, I mean, in the lineup, obviously, not down to like AAA or anything, but not shifting his position. Say he comes out of it, you know, then the Royals look at that and they use that as justification for keeping him there, which, I mean, I guess I can see that argument in some respect, but at the same time, it shouldn't really be like that. It should be, you know, he's not going that hot right now. We have faith in him, so we're not going to abandon him. You know, we're just going to move him down in the lineup so he gets things going, and then we can put him back. Because the fact of the matter is, like we talked about with Sam, you cannot – those excuses are out the window. It's not about Hosmer has to learn how to bat third anymore. It's not Hosmer has to learn how to take these pitches and learn to hit from these pitches or hit pitchers when he's getting the best of the best. No, it's over. It doesn't matter if – what he has to learn. It matters that you have to win baseball games now, because you put yourself in this situation. You won 86 games last year, which was great. But, you know, that was a step. You said it was a step because you tried to, the front office tried to curb this whole, you know, the idea that, oh, well, they still didn't make the playoffs. Well, they tried to curb that by saying it was just a step and that the next step is the playoffs. Well, you know, here we are. This is the next step, and part of that equation is that those excuses go out the window. You can't do that anymore. You have to make a move. And then when Hosmer gets back and gets back on track, then you can put him back up to third and you say, okay, he's a number three hitter. That's where he should be. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with moving a player down in the lineup, especially if you're just talking from third to fifth. And the only possible flip side is that, oh, well, poor Eric Hosmer, Mr. Millionaire guy who's just, you know, this baseball prodigy, has to get his poor feelings hurt by getting moved down two spots in the lineup. Well, you know what? It's just like Sam was saying, like you wrote that article, they need to grow up because you're a professional and you're not doing too well. You need to realize it. And it's like we talked about, is either last week or the week before, you know, with the hitting coach, I think it was last week, with the switch in the hitting coach, that's kind of an excuse that the players can use to galvanize them looking inside, looking at themselves and saying, this is what I need to change. Well, you know, if Ned gets this player's manager rep and the players seem to love him, well, you know, part of being a player's manager also might be doing what, or should be, doing what's best for the player. You know, he's not going to go out to the media and throw Hosmer under the bus, and he shouldn't. But if he pulls Hosmer into the office and says, hey, Eric, we're moving you down to fifth. We still have faith in you, but, you know, this is what's best for the team right now. This is what's best for you because it's going to give you better pitches to look at. It's going to give you more opportunities to get back on track. This is what we need. We need you to not worry about batting third or fifth. We just need you to focus on getting better. And, you know, it seems simple. I know that's not necessarily how it always plays out. I know there's a lot more factors into it and managing a locker room and all that. But, you know, it just befuddles me that not only can the Royals be so protective, but the fact that they need to be, because Eric Hosmer or Mike Moustakas or whoever is legitimately that fragile, that being moved down in the lineup or moved down to AAA when they're hitting 174 is something that they have to worry about totally destroying this player. You know, if that's the case, we've talked about maybe Moose isn't that good. Well, if that's the case and you're worried about that, well, guess what? Maybe you're not cut out for this. I mean, obviously, we know that they are, but it's kind of one of those things where you got to look and you say, am I a professional baseball player or not? If I am, I'm going to take this in stride. I'm going to get better, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to earn this. And that's what they need to do. Because if Eric Hosmer, 2 years from now, signs a contract, he does what he's been doing the last couple of years, and he ends up batting 280-something and signs a decent contract with the Yankees or whoever else, you know, they're not going to put up with this. The Yankees, the Red Sox, the Angels, the Dodgers, and whoever picks him up that's not the Royals, they're not going to put up with this. They're not going to put it, just going to, they're not going to just gift him the three spot in the lineup and say, well, this is yours. You know, no one, you can't lose it. You know, if he's batting 250 for a couple of weeks, he's dropping in a Yankees lineup. And the Royals don't do it here, and that's part of kind of a lot of things we hit on with Sam, but I just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be some kind of thing where they just really genuinely feel like he can't handle that kind of a downshift. And what does that say? I mean, what's going to happen if the Royals do make the playoffs and you get to October where there's, you know, an even bigger spotlight and, you know, there's more pressure and there's bigger expectations and there's fewer at-bats to work back from it, too. So, I mean, then what happens? Or if he does go to the Yankees, he's not going to get a pass there. It's going to be even more scrutiny. They're in probably the best situation they can be. They're in a city that doesn't have a huge media throng that's going to be, you know, very in their face about anything. You know, I mean, you'll have a fan base that is just hungry to win, and they want to see these players do well, and will give them a pass a lot of times just because they want to see them do well. I mean, you can't get a better situation than that, because, I mean, I think it was maybe Mellinger in a column or in a Twitter Tuesday or something even said that, you know, what kind of a job is this as a big league player? Because you can come in, struggle, and the fans are going to blame the front office. So there's, like, no pressure from the fan base on most of these guys except Billy Butler. And so, you know, there's no reason to not be able to hit third, or even if it is that big of a deal, you know, okay, fifth, you know, it's less pressure. It's, you know, there you go. It's, you're still hitting in a big part of the lineup, still an important part. It's not, you know, complete demotion down to 8 or 9. So, you know, just deal with it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think the lineup would be better off than that. I think Hosmer in the short term would be better than that. Now, if he does hit, you know, like he did last year or, you know, towards the second half of 2011 and everything, then, yeah, that's then certainly, you know, put him back in the third spot. I think that's okay. You know, I don't have a problem with that if he's hitting. But if he's not hitting and there's a clear alternative, then, yeah, I mean, shift the lineup around. Maybe it's a small change, and maybe over the course of a year it's only 20 runs, but that's 20 runs you could use. And right now, you know, you look at what the Royals have done the last week. They lost by 1 in Detroit. They lost by 2 in Seattle in a game that they went into tied in the ninth, and then they lost 2 one-run games. So, you know, you could certainly use some runs there. So if you can get them, get them. And if that means you have to shift the lineup around, well, someone's ego is just going to have to, you know, you're just going to have to swallow your pride and take the hit and just and make it happen. So it's got to be something on that end where they just really feel like as a front office, as a manager, that they really feel like the best thing for the player is to keep them in this spot. And I guess it's got to be because there's some catastrophe if they move them from there. Because there's certainly nothing in his swing or pitch selection or results or, you know, any of that that suggests that, you know, he's going to turn it around like that, that this is just a little blip. So it's got to be something on the mental side that they see that, that we don't get to.
Yeah, and you know, your best case scenario is you move the two around and Alex Gordon continues to dominate, and then Hosmer starts to take off, and then you say, you know what, you're doing great, you're putting up the numbers, you know, you're looking good, we're just going to keep things the way they are. And then you've got, you know, Gordon, and you keep Butler keeps going like he has, not the last few games, but the during that winning streak, if Butler kind of carries that momentum, then you've got a 3-4-5 that's just deadly, you know. So, and there's a lot of good things that can come of this. I mean, your good things that can come of it are, you know, Eric Hosmer doing better, Alex Gordon doing better, the whole team doing better, you know, increasing the strength of the lineup, especially that 3-5 spot. Whereas the flip side, the only bad thing that can happen is Eric Hosmer completely tanks, which you've got to have enough faith in your front office to know that's not going to happen. And even always, as Buddy Bell says, don't say it can't get worse, because it can. But we know that. But Eric Hosmer's probably not going to be Mike Moustakas. But if the main point is if he is moves down to fifth and doesn't improve at all, then the team is no worse off, because the last month he's been terrible, and they've still been doing what they're doing. So there's no downside to them switching besides just a huge tank job by Eric Hosmer. And again, that comes back to what you said, Mike. If they move, I mean, if that's what you're really worried about, then there's something wrong there.
Yeah,
so
it's a bigger problem than Hosmer not being able to hit right now. It's just a big problem. I mean, if you look at it, Nori Aoki has a higher OPS than Eric Hosmer. I mean, come on.
And Billy Butler, you know, and to the fans' credit, as he's improved, the Billy Butler hate has died down considerably over the last month.
Yeah.
But all the same, you know, as bad as Billy Butler started off, and he started off bad. I mean, we didn't mince words on this podcast either, even though we're all fans of Billy Butler here. He started off poorly, and his batting average is almost 20 points higher than Eric Hosmer right now.
26 points higher.
There you go, more than 20 points.
Yeah, his slugging's higher too.
26, and the horrible, horrible start. So Eric Hosmer got off to a good start, a very good start. Billy Butler got off to a very bad start. So as bad as Billy Butler was, Hosmer has been worse the last month. And then as good as Hosmer was, Billy Butler's been better. I mean, if that just to kind of put into perspective what kind of a tumble he's had over the last month,
He's been rough.
Yes, and the Royals need him. They need him, and he's hurting the team more than he's helping at the three spot. And if all he does is stays even at where he's at right now, then he hurts the team less in the five spot than he does in the three spot. So there's a lot of sense that it makes a lot of sense to make that move, but the Royals just refuse to do it.
Yep, but I mean, let's put some numbers behind this, because you know there are tools online that you can find, and I went to Baseball Musings and they have a lineup analyzer, which it's pretty simple. You plug in the players' names, you put in their on-base percentage and their slugging percentage, and it will tell you what that lineup should average in a game, per game. So I went and I plugged in Ned Yost's typical lineup, you know, Aoki at the one and all the way down to Escobar in the ninth spot. This, you know, assuming Aoki comes back, you know, he's on the DL now after kind of strained groin that I think happened when we were doing the podcast last time. So that, you know, obviously you can't put him in the lineup now for another 2 weeks, but, you know, just assuming that same lineup that's been typical from day one, that lineup with going Aoki, Infante, Hosmer, Butler, Gordon, Perez, Moustakas, Kane, Escobar, that lineup will score, according to Baseball Musings, and their current stats coming into today, June 23rd, before this game started, that team should average 4.157 runs per game, which isn't too bad, really, when you get down to it. It's about 673 runs in a season. What it'll also do while telling you about that lineup, that optimal, or you know, the average runs per game for that lineup, it'll also optimize it to the point where it'll tell you what the best lineup would be. And it turns out that, according to that, the best lineup would score 4.304 runs per game. And that lineup would be Lorenzo Cain. Sal Perez just hit a home run. The lineup would be Lorenzo Cain leading off, Alex Gordon batting second, either of Eric Hosmer or Omar Infante. There are two lineups, and they switch in the same spots. So Hosmer and Infante batting third. So, you know, the website kind of goes against me there, but let's stick it out. Perez batting fourth, Escobar batting fifth, whoever, Infante or Hosmer batting sixth, then Butler, Moose, and Aoki. Obviously, the Royals aren't going to be doing that because there are certain people that they expect with a long-term track record to produce, Butler being towards more the top of the lineup and you know, things like that. But right there,
so,
I mean,
you're... Sorry, for just to clarify, so you use the season OPS, right?
Yeah, it's their current on-base and slugging at this stage. So it both components, the on-base and then the slugging. So you enter each stat, not just their OPS, but both stats. So they do, you know.
It still said Butler should be batting seventh.
Yeah, and I think that's because his overall, his on-base is only .329, where, you know, normally we're used to it being higher because he is coming back from that start, and his slugging is still a little low, too. So if you compare him to someone like Perez, who has a .333, really, really close on-base, but his slugging's .441, Perez is three spots higher. And so it's still balancing. It's not going straight up, okay, this is, you know, we're all going to go ranked by on base percentage or by slugging. It's going to still kind of look at, you know, the construction of the lineup based on, you know, cleanup hitter and getting, you know, who's going to be on ahead and the idea of getting guys on and then having a good slugging guy behind them too. So that's part of what it is. So that's kind of how that works out for Butler, and I think we would expect him to be higher.
I'd be curious if you plugged in like the last month OPS.
Oh, I know.
How much of a difference that would make in the lineup order?
I mean, it would be significant. Hosmer would be way at the bottom. Moose would probably be higher. Oki'd be around the middle. Kane would
and that's
be in there.
And that would, that fits a little bit more to our argument, is that it's not a Hosmer as a player isn't a three hitter. It's just that right now he's not a three hitter and he's hurting the team.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that shows that it's just a small change in the lineup. It's, you know, right now Kane's hitting first, you know, and even this optimal lineup is putting Gordon ahead of Hosmer, so Gordon would then in this lineup be getting more at bats, and the lineup would be more productive because this lineup would be scoring 697 runs over the course of a year, and that's 24 runs. So if you go by the measurement of 10 runs is a win, and you're assuming the same run prevention from your pitchers and your defense, well, that's 2.5 wins, so that you could probably bank on. So 2 wins right there, possibly. And if the runs distribute well enough, you know, maybe you do get some of those wins to be 3-2 instead of 2-1 losses.
And you've got, you know, 2.5 wins. Well, it's like, oh, okay, you know, just a couple of games. Well, the Royals may be in a position this year where 2 games is the difference between October baseball and sitting at home for the 29th consecutive year. So, I mean, they're right in the thick of things right now. And, hey, if they won 2 more games right now, well, they'd be only be a half game out instead of 2.5 games. So, I mean, that is not an insignificant number right there.
Yeah, it just goes back to things adding up. And, you know, you look at even last year when, you know, they ended up 86-76, you know, a couple wins would have made a difference. Maybe it wouldn't have gotten them in, but, you know, you get it at the right spots and you have a shot. And so it is something that it's a very small thing. And I would agree that generally lineup construction doesn't do a whole lot, but it is just the idea that you're going to have, you know, your best hitters get up there more often. And there's you can refute this lineup analysis. You can definitely do that. You could say that I want good, you know, batting average guys. You can certainly make that argument if you want to. But you can't really go against the idea that your leadoff guy over the course of a year, or whoever you bat leadoff, whatever the leadoff spot is, they're going to get more at-bats than the number two. I mean, it's what you've started this off with. You're going to be in that position. It's infallible.
Yes.
It's just going to be what happens. You can't come up with a situation where you say, where the cleanup spot comes up more often than the first spot. It just will not happen. So
the ultimate point here being that Mike and I are trying to make, it's not, while it may be too overblown how it fits together from a puzzle type standpoint of, you know, who's batting in front of who and who's behind who and protecting who and all that stuff, what's not overblown is the value of the first spot in your lineup just because of the mathematical certainty of them getting more at-bats. Same with the second and the third on down the line. So it's just a simple point. But something that, while left-righty construction and Hosmer needs to be in a power position versus hitting behind someone or in front of somebody else, that stuff is overblown, and I agree with that to a certain extent. But what I do disagree with is that there definitely is value to having the right people in those spots that are going to get more opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, it seems obvious, and I guess, I don't know. I mean, it's a baseball thing. Baseball guys are going to be, you know, they're going to adhere to their traditions, and
Yost is a baseball guy.
But I was just curious, so I went in and I did plug in. You know, we talked about on-base percentage not long ago, and, you know, I just plugged everybody in, ranked by their on-base percentage and how much a lineup that strictly went by who got on base most frequently and what they would do. And, you know, that lineup would be Gordon, Kane, Perez, Butler, Escobar, Aoki, Infante, Hosmer, and Moustakas. And that's the other thing. Hosmer has the second worst on-base percentage among Royals regulars. So that's another kind of strike against him. He's been bad, and it's overshadowed guys like Infante, who's really struggled too, but I think it's probably he's been hurt. But that lineup would score about 4.226 runs per game, just going strictly by best on base percentage. And, you know, that on its own, that's, you know, 684. So that's, you know, another 11 runs that you would score over the course of a year, just going on something as simple as who gets on base most often. So, you know, even that's better than what Ned Yost is. And, you know, just one more point further, I went and swapped Hosmer and Gordon, and it was a negligible difference because I think still you've got Aoki and Infante at the top, and their on base isn't that great. So that it's going to kind of drag the top of the lineup a bit. But even swapping Gordon and Hosmer is a 4.199 lineup right there. You know, is their average per game. And so comparing that to the 4.157, it's very small. It's only 7 more runs. But, again, that's 7 more runs. So, you know, it's definitely going to be more productive.
Yeah. So, with that, I think we'll probably wrap up here. We talked to Sam Mellinger, had a lot of good things to say. Went in about the lineup construction, what we touched on before, but had a little bit of a different angle here. And just to kind of recap, we had Sam's book that he contributed to coming out. It's The Art of Scouting, right? Is the name of the title of the book?
Yep.
And about Art Stewart, longtime scout for the Kansas City Royals. Dude's been around forever through multiple regimes, and Sam shared a couple stories. I'm sure it's going to be an excellent book, so go ahead and pick that up. If you're a baseball junkie like the rest of us, I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
And, you know, we had that contest we brought up last week. I'm going to get a copy. I'm going to get a copy of that book, and we'll make that one of the prizes too. So email us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com with some Royals stat fact. That you could find either on just Baseball Reference by browsing, or if you do, take advantage of the Royals promo code and sign up for the Play Index and do some searching. It could be historical, it could be current, it could be anything that's an interesting Royals stat that kind of makes you go, if I can borrow the 90s song title. You know, just go to Baseball Reference, click the Play Index in the top right, plug in Royals, you'll save $6. Going to save you, you know, it's $30 for the total thing. It's, you know, if you have any kind of inclination to dig into stats and stuff, that's absolutely something you need to have. I have 2 sports subscriptions that I regularly go with. Well, I have 3. Okay, ESPN Insider, but that's because it's cheap. Otherwise, I wouldn't. Sabre yearly membership, which is, I'm a nerd, so I like that. But the Play Index is another must-have if you're going to be a hardcore baseball fan. So, you know, check that out. Dig up something. Send it along to us, and we're going to try to find some people and give them some books. You know, and we'll include Sam's book in that. And not to mention, I've got 3 copies of Save It Home by Willie Mays Akins as well to hand out to anybody who hasn't read that yet. It's you know, as far as athlete books go, a lot of times they're pretty fluffy. His really does not hold anything back. He's very forthright in everything. So it's an interesting read. So you definitely want to try to win a copy of that and just hop on the Play Index. Send something to us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And here in a few weeks, we'll come up with some winners.
Yeah. So, one more time, that's Baseball Reference Play Index, promo code Royals. So I guess, like we've said before, they're a sponsor of ours. So if you want to go and sign up for that, we would very much appreciate it, as would Baseball Reference. So with that, we'll end the show. And as we record this now, Monday, June 23rd, the Royals are in the bottom of the second inning. They're already up 2-0 on Zach Greinke and the Dodgers with a home run by Sal Perez. So hopefully we'll be talking about the Royals at the very least ending the 4-game losing streak and hopefully starting up another winning streak and maybe having a winning homestand. So with that, we'll go ahead and end this show. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.